everybody. Welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
G. Larry Butler.
And...
Bonnie Butler.
All right. And so G. Larry Butler was here... I was here before with Paul on the first episode of this third season, and we were doing Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Oh, and, my favorite film.
You might want to get closer.
All right. One of my favorite all-time films.
Yes. And then, I guess you were not around, Bonnie, right, at the time. And you might want to also get closer, because it's right here is the microphone. So, there we go. So, basically, we started this podcast off, like the season off, with a pretty good one. And then the last one I just did, that one was whoosh. That went down.
Whoa.
And it was, you know, it got, let's just say it got a 30 from all, you know, 10 from all of us. And so it was...
No redeeming social value.
I don't want to go into it.
Okay.
It was not what we were hoping it would be, I guess, or something, or what they were hoping. I knew it was going to be bad, but they had no clue. So now I wanted to do something that's a little bit more fun. So I picked a movie that a friend of mine had actually made back in 2005. I believe this was his third or fourth feature film. He had done a movie called Skeleton Key, and then not the Skeleton Key everybody knows, like with like Nicole Kidman or somebody like that in it. But there was he also did another movie called Deceptors. And then he might have done another movie before this one or so, but this one is called Shadow Hunters.
Wow.
And it is a lot of fun. It is not, I don't think this is going to get us a bad rating. I think you guys are going to enjoy this movie, especially after her Bonnie was going to be joining us. I figured this would be a more lighthearted, kind of fun. It's sort of funny at times, so I think you guys will all enjoy this. So are you excited?
Yeah, very excited.
All right.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I knew you would be excited. So thank you guys, and catch us in a little bit when we talk about it. But until then, listen to some mood music. And we're back. Wow, this was not what I was remembering this movie as being. So let's just say next time I will buy, I will bring something a little bit more kid-friendly. Something not so graphic, I guess. With the violence, it wasn't that bad, I guess. Like, there's some gore to it, but really, there was more sex and nudity than I expected from it. So it was not... expecting to put a 14-year-old girl through that, so sorry about that.
It's fine.
It's okay. Forgive you. You didn't know.
Well, no, I forgot. And if I had rewatched it last night or something, I would have been like, yeah, I would have said let's get something else instead. And I mean, there's a couple other things I could have picked, and so I picked this one because I just bought it from Dark Delicacies. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but it's a really nice store in Burbank.
Right,
and
been there.
You've been there?
The proprietor has long white hair.
Yeah, yeah. Dell.
I went there with William Winkler years ago because we were he knew us from Frankenstein versus the Creature from Blood Cove, which was our classic monster movie, an homage to the 30s and 40s. And we won Best Feature at the World Horror Fest for that movie. So. Anyway, I'm familiar with some of these people through that.
Okay, cool.
But this is a far cry from that.
Well, that's definitely, that was an homage to the 50s and everything. This is more modern day kind of thing, at least at that particular time of these kind of films. But I don't know. So I guess I'll give a little background of the movie. Shadow Hunters was made, I believe, in 2004. It was actually made. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit more research while I was watching the thing. So basically, it was made in 2004, and the filmmaker John Johnson had made another movie prior to this called Alucard, which was Dracula backwards, but it was Dracula story, and it was supposed to be the most you know, authentic to the book, you know, adaptation. You know, they tried to really go to the book and you know, do that. So they made that movie. And then, wait, did he make that movie before? Now I'm trying to remember because maybe he didn't. I'm not sure. You know, it's funny because I went to their website. That's where I found it. And I saw that Alucard was there before. And then it said Shadowhunters. So I don't know. There's around this time they made like the same, a bunch of movies back to back. So they made like Skeleton Key and Deceptors. So only John and the D crew would actually know, Darkstone Entertainment crew would actually know which one is like before or after. But this was definitely made around the same time as Skeleton Key and Deceptors for sure, because they were produced by this girl named Rebecca Taylor, who plays Sarah, the main girl. They made a couple different movies in that vein and that time period, and I think another one was called The Jester, and they just did a bunch of different things. And we may actually be doing The Jester next year or another year, so I really, really, really love that movie. It's a little bit different. Once again, not kid-friendly enough for you to watch, but it's a little bit more tamer than this one, actually, which is funny because this movie I thought was tamer than that one, but I guess not. So this movie was made in 2000, and as I said, 2004 or 5. At least it was put out in 5. And basically has his friends, John Johnson's friends, playing a lot of the roles. So that's why we were talking before, is a lot of the characters are very, you said wooden and everything. And we'll probably get more into it when we talk about the actors.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that is kind of the writing style and the, you know, what he likes. He kind of likes those B-movie kind of...
Kind of like Dragnet, just the facts.
Just monotone.
They would fire any actor who put emotion into their dialogue.
In Dragnet?
Yes.
I did not
absolutely
know that. So everything
Joe Friday.
Everything was planned that way?
Or Jack Webb, I guess, was the name of the actual actor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he told them, if you put any emotion in your dialogue, you're done.
Oh, wow.
So I was thinking maybe they wanted him to do that, but it just seemed a little dreary to me. Toward the end, I have to give them kudos because they improved a little bit. Maybe because, you know, they had some adrenaline rush and they got some emotion in their voice. But to start out with, it's just dreary for me.
You think so?
Oh, extremely.
Well, a lot of it is, and there's also exposition a lot of times, too.
Yes,
they had to explain a lot of things.
But exposition doesn't have to be unemotional.
I know, but it's like, you know, we have to explain this. You know, this is happening. We have to explain this. And I feel like sometimes, and once again, we'll probably get into that when we get into the acting, so we'll talk about that. I want to go, I guess, into the storyline of it, which basically it starts out with these four... shadow hunters have captured a demon named he had a mouthful of a name, Malfader. And Malfader is played by Lincoln Lilly and is basically this just demon guy. He possesses this woman, and then, you know, and then John Johnson's character, who's the director, Hudson, shoots the girl and kills her. And that's the thing. If you kill the girl, you know, the girl dies, right? You know, but if you get the demon out of the girl lives, kind of like most demon hunting movies are.
Yeah.
And so, basically, do you know much about demon hunting stuff? Like, have you watched any movies with them?
Well, I've watched The Exorcist.
The original Exorcist movie?
Yeah, like, that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
But
really?
I just played the husband of the woman who plays Captain Howdy.
Eileen Dietz, right?
In something called Compatible. It's a true-to-life horror story about someone who makes the wrong choice on a dating site and dates a man who becomes a demon. I mean, in real life, you know, not a pretend demon, not an not kind of like a fantasy demon, but he was just a person like Ted Bundy.
Oh.
And so he wreaks havoc on her. I can't say too much, but she regrets ever dating this person.
Yeah, I wouldn't. But, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So, but so
anyway,
go back, like you were saying, you you watched The Exorcist. Is that the only kind of demon movie you've kind of seen, or?
She's seen other ones with us, but.
I've seen the Ouija board movie.
Okay, and Ouija, and so we had an Ouija in this movie. There was an Ouija in this movie.
Yeah, and what else?
And you said you would never play with one at all, and.
Well, my friend did it, and she said that now she believes she has ghosts in her house, so.
It's funny how everybody always says that, you know, after they've done it, but like I don't necessarily believe it or not. I think maybe you, like, if you do it, like, you kind of scare yourself into probably believing that there's that, but maybe there are, but you never know.
Sometimes I would like to do it, but then other times, like, I feel like it would be a risk that I'm taking.
Might want to do it with your father.
Not in this house.
We'll
do it in your house.
Oh, no. My roommate would kill me. She's already, so I'm writing a demon movie right now, and I did an exorcism scene, and I heard some tapping on the window of the place I'm at, and it just, oh my God. So I heard tapping, and then I went to sleep, and I heard a doorbell, you know, and I woke up, and I was, like, freaking out, and nobody was there. And so then I went to the bathroom, and I started puking, like, projectile vomiting, and I haven't done that in forever, and I don't know what it was, because I didn't eat anything that was...
Was it a psilocybin that you took that night? Or
what?
Was it some kind of drug?
No, nothing. So I don't know what happened, but... somebody was telling me maybe I projectile vomited, because, like, to get the demons out or whatever. Maybe there were demons in me. I don't know.
Possibly.
Because, you know, in The Exorcism, there is a projectile vomiting.
Oh,
a
lot of it. Oh yeah.
Pea soup.
Yeah. So, yeah. Pretty gross.
And a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, and that was literally what happened with me, and I don't even think I ate that much, so I don't know what, you know, whatever. But, anyway, the point was that there was... It was already freaking out my roommate hearing all this stuff, so she will not allow me to bring in a
Ouija board.
No, that would... We do have an Ouija pillow, but I don't have, like, a planchette for it, so there's, you know...
That's probably why.
Yeah, there's just already enough. There's already enough stuff in there. But anyway, to go back to the movie... so this was your first time kind of seeing, like, another... like, demon movie that wasn't really, like, exorcism or... Because it's funny, you're the first person on our podcast to be of your generation, you know?
Special.
Actually, it's really cool because it gives me a different perspective. This movie was made basically the year that you were born.
Yeah.
You know? Cool. So, or around the year that you were born, maybe earlier, because it probably was made in 2004, and so you weren't even born when it was actually made, but you were born when it was distributed. Yeah. So that's actually a very interesting thing of hearing your thoughts, because, you know, this is a different time. Like, you look back at this as, like, this is history, you know, compared to, you know, what you're used to now.
Uh-huh.
Because we kind of live in a... world that's full of, like, the indie films that are, like, famous now are, like, bigger stuff, like the Blumhouse movies, like Truth or Dare or Ouija. I don't know if Ouija was Blumhouse, but it was of that, you know, of that type, you know, and stuff. So you weren't like, are you a fan of horror yourself, or do you kind of...
Yeah, I am. Like, I like horror movies.
She's been in a few of them.
Been in a few of them,
like Calliope.
Calliope.
I had the lead role, but she had a role too in it.
Yeah.
It was a 48-hour film festival type of thing.
Nice.
And, about a guy who kidnaps young women and then puts them in cages.
Wow.
And it was questionable whether I should have gotten her involved in that, but she didn't see any of my stuff. She was just in one of the end scenes.
Oh, okay. You know, so you didn't actually... Did you ever watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah. It's a really good movie.
But it wasn't anything like this.
Yeah.
Not at all.
No. And this, I mean, going back to this film, this film is very graphic, as I said. So it was not what I was expecting or remembering. So we did fast forward through a couple things, which... Understandably yeah. so, which yeah. it got, I think you even closed your eyes, it felt like, it a couple of times because you just didn't want to see it. And I don't blame you.
She passed out.
For a little bit, I think, right? Like, you're just like a little tired.
Because my dad did pass out
a
couple times.
I have low blood sugar. I have diabetes, so that's why.
Yeah. Well, you did that in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers too, so it's not, you know.
I can't stay awake through any movie.
And it wasn't like you weren't bored, it's just you're tired, you know.
No.
And this movie wasn't, I don't think it was necessarily boring. You said before too, yourself, Bonnie, you were tired as well before watching the movie.
So once probably the didn't action help. Kicked in, it was fine.
Yeah.
But it was just before that, the exposition.
I was explaining was a lot of the stuff, setting up the characters.
It's a little too talky. For me.
Really?
No, quite frankly, yes. It was unnecessary, gratuitous, you know, and I thought it's way too much exposition. And so, anyway, that's my frank opinion.
Be honest, you know.
It didn't need to have all that stuff.
I mean, the beauty of filmmaking and filmmakers, you know, and especially with John. I mean, I got to be friends with John Johnson when he was, I met him when I was working on a short film. Mm-hmm. It was my second short that I had, you know, and I had spent money on it, and I got a special effects guy to come out, and he brought John Johnson's girlfriend, who now is his wife, Mariah, to be his assistant, to be the special effects guy's assistant. And, I mean, they had formed a company, and they worked together and stuff, so they were working on this, and I didn't know them. But, you know, I loved Mariah and I loved working with them. And then John didn't know me other than being a filmmaker. And then I asked if I could be an extra in his movie Plan 9, which is a remake to Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, wow.
And he was very happy to have me on board as like a, I just was like a grave zombie. And then after that, I started acting with him. And I've seen, looking back at his old films, these are... You know, these are old films. These are old B-movie films that were shot on, like, digital video for nothing. You know, basically, they were films that were made on shoestring budgets. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably $100 to $500, if even that. And that's maybe to feed the cast and crew, you know, shot with cameras that they had, editing equipment that they had at their disposal. Some of the special effects were actually pretty good, and I guess we'll go into that later.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like, it was pretty much just shot on, like, a no budget.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically made this whole storyline probably set around the abandoned hospital that they had available. You know, so they shot basically this whole movie inside. Almost all of it's inside, if not, like, outside of it. So there's really, like, very little locations, spots, or whatever. And a bunch of different characters. They have the four main guy, four main shadow hunters. And then they have the sorority girls, the two guys that are supposed to spook the sorority girls. And then the demon himself. Mm-hmm. And two random guys, I guess, that live there. You know, like two homeless guys that are living inside. I'm guessing that's what they are. They're never really explained, but there's like they have like Cockney accents or something, and they're very silly kind of characters that are just kind of, you know, basically there to be killed.
Well,
you know,
the guy on the floor, I didn't really understand what he was saying at first. Like, he's just kind of mumbling, but he sounded like he had a like deep accent.
That was, I think, the Cockney guy or something. He had a Cockney accent where he was talking like he was a British, you know, British accent where he was fun, but there wasn't much character development for that, you know, or whatever. And that was never, you know, planned. Like, I mean, because when you make a movie like that and those side characters, supporting characters, are kind of just you know, you're not, you don't need to know their backstory. You just need to know that they're living there as like homeless beggars or something.
Right.
And, you know, and they just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, yeah, kind of thing.
Right.
Then, so there's those characters and then all of a sudden they have, they bring back, or they, I don't know if they, do they summon him? They summon the demon, Malfader.
Yeah.
And, which I don't know why they come, why he's like there or back, or there was a little bit of story.
Well, there's a fault line and they think he's the cause of it.
Okay.
Something about a fault, remember? Underneath the buildings. And
yeah. So the, that's why they go back to that.
They're trying to avert a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And so they need to bring him back.
And he was talking about that too. Like, yeah, he was planning to destroy. And we'll get into my my thought on that ending, you know, later in a little bit. So let's, I guess, let's go right into the cast and characters, because pretty much that's pretty much the gist of the story, is that these guys have to stop this demon. I mean, that's really like the simple core story, is all four of them are supposed to stop them, and then they're also joined by a woman who I guess is a witch, but we'll get into what she is later. There will be spoilers in this, so if you haven't seen Shadowhunters, understand the ending will be spoiled. All of that will be spoiled. So go see it. You can buy it, I think, on Amazon. I bought it at Dark Delicacies. I don't think there's any other copies there, but I'm sure there'll be more. And I would love to, they have commentary on that DVD, which I loved. Oh. That's one of my favorite things, is John Johnson used to do commentaries for all his films. And so if you can get, like, individual copies of them, you can actually get the commentary tracks and stuff. So, I don't know. Do you ever listen to commentary tracks at all? Like, those people where they talk over the movie and everything?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I think that's for aficionados like yourself.
I know. Right? I don't even think you probably
would. It's very distracting to me. But once I've seen it, and then they did one on the Double D Avenger, which you have.
Right.
And there's a commentary by Joe Bob Briggs, or whatever his name is.
But that's not on the VHS, right?
That's another
on,
one.
That's
another,
on an actual DVD.
Way. Yeah, he put that out. And,
okay. I'll have to check that out.
Funny, actually. He slams the whole movie, but, you know, in a funny way. But that's what he does. He's like Don Rickles of commentary.
Oh, Joe Bob Briggs? Yeah, that's funny. Let's go into the cast. So the cast stars John Johnson plays Hudson, and Hudson is the guy who basically, I don't know, he's not the ringleader, but he's, the ringleader is played by Ted Taylor, played Murphy, who is the father of Rebecca Taylor, who plays the witch girl.
He's the big square-jawed guy with a hat, right?
Yeah, yeah, that guy. And yeah, we'll talk about him in a little bit, but... So John Johnson, and you said John Johnson you thought was the best.
He was, far and away. Well, actually the demon himself with the pentagram on
his forehead. Like him the most?
He was good too.
Yeah.
But I think John Johnson, kudos to you,
yeah,
as director and an actor. Now, the black actor, I don't know his name, he was pretty good too. Pretty,
yeah,
as
David
an actor,
Simmons.
I look for, convince me. Make me believe that you're real. And the other two couldn't do it.
Yeah, you didn't like the guy who played Ray, which was Liam Smith.
Now, toward the end, they all picked up their game a little bit. But I'm saying the first third of the movie, I wasn't real happy with it.
And,
wasn't convinced.
Once again, that might have been because of the setup of everything, explaining
possibly
everything.
But still, you can put a little emotion into it. You know, it's just, I just don't understand that. But maybe they were new. They were just starting to, you know, feel their way.
Yeah, so...
It just kind of put me off a little bit.
Liam Smith plays Ray, and that was the other guy, the one that gets hurt or whatever, and gets you know, the soul of the demon.
Stuff on his forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't bad toward the end.
Yeah. Especially when he got to play the demon.
Yeah.
You know, he was more fun and more lively, and maybe that's also a little bit of the direction that John Johnson wanted with a lot of these characters, is that he wanted the characters to kind of be sort of...
They're flat.
Flat, because later it builds up.
Okay.
Now, the problem with that is if you watch that movie in the beginning, you are just like, you know, you, if you weren't watching it for this, you might have turned it off because you've been it's a little flat. Or fallen asleep because of, you know, because of that. So
you got to hold my interest and keep me awake.
Exactly. And then David Simmons played Goose, which is the black guy. He was wonderful. Yeah. The black actor was, he was wonderful.
I had no fault with him.
Yeah. Did you think he did a good job?
Yeah, he did pretty good.
Yeah. So I liked him in that. And then Rebecca Taylor played Sarah, who was the witch girl.
Yeah,
who
she
was
good.
She was good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln Lilly played Malfador, the when he's up there. And all the rest of the characters, like even like the sorority girls and everything, they're all kind of supporting, kind of like, they, you literally wouldn't care if they died or lived. However, Hudson had that problem of he killed the guy, the girl in the beginning, and he didn't, he kind of always felt like ashamed and guilty of that. So he didn't ever want to do that again. Mm-hmm. And so there's one point where one of the characters comes back to life, it seems, and he still shoots them, you know, and everything. And he kind of still has that guilt. But they say as shadow hunters, you can't let that, you know, if you kill the person, you're killing them so that the demon, you know, would not be able to get into them, you know, anymore.
I think what you're trying to say, even before this, was that these guys are unflappable. They're emotionless because they're all business.
Right.
You know, they're like the Kevin Costner in Untouchables. You know, just flat. Just like...
Yeah.
So maybe they were trying to do that deliberately.
Yeah, a little bit.
I shouldn't be too harsh about this. But still, it just left me wanting.
You wanted more.
Yes, I did.
From it. Which is understandable.
As an actor.
Yeah.
Now, you see it as a director and other things, but I see it as an actor. And I watch those actors very carefully. You know, very observant. It's just like...
Well, and you have to understand, a lot of these are John Johnson's friends. You know, these are people he didn't like... I don't think he, like, auditioned for many people. Maybe he did, so don't quote me on that. But I don't think he auditioned people. I think he just used his friends. Mm-hmm. And his friends were, you know, actors. I mean, you know, people who are striving to do that, or just people who are just like, hey, let's go make a movie on a on a Saturday or whatever, you know, which I mean, that would be just like you, Bonnie, going, let me go make a movie with my friends. It might not be, you know, the most highest of quality, but you know what, you're proud of it, and the fact that it's out there and available, I think that's pretty freaking neat.
She made one.
She made one with her friends.
It's kind of in a computer somewhere at school, and we can't seem to get it. But I'm very proud of what she did, and we actually wrote and collaborated in a couple of scenes.
Well, it was just like a little project for, because I was in filming class in eighth grade, so my old middle school, and it was just for a grade. I mean, I wanted to do it, but then like, I guess, like, I got really attached to it because there's, like, very important scenes. And, like, I created so many, like, characters and different places to film. So I guess it's kind of cool to do it. But,
yeah. Definitely. That's awesome.
We've never been able to find it.
Yeah.
It's lost somewhere.
Well, you'll do another one then. You know, that's generally how it works, you know, is sometimes that stuff happens. I've had things, projects that I've been proud of that unfortunately just disappear or whatever. And that's, once again, that's with this digital age, is like, once it's gone, you know, like there's no trying to find it or retrieve it or whatever. At least, you know, at least with like digital film, sometimes the little mini DVs and things, which I don't know if this was shot on mini DV, but it looks like it probably might have. But yeah, so they have little tapes, you know.
Yeah, I've done one like that. I had to get it run off to a disc and later. So I've never really watched it. I'm somewhere around the house.
Well,
but
I have a question about the movie. Could I?
Sure.
All right. Well, I was kind of confused, like, why they killed the girls, like, why Hudson, like, shot the girl, but it didn't really do anything to the demon, just killed the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't, like, even though they had the book, they didn't use it. They just killed the girl, and then the next girl, and the one after that.
Right.
And then it just, the demon just moved on. And all the girls died eventually, except the witch. So...
And then they got brought back to life with the zombies. But yeah. I think I have an answer to that. I'm hoping that I can explain this in a way that might be understandable, because it is a little bit confusing why he would do that. Mm-hmm. So, and he did feel sorry at first for doing it, and they kind of tell him, don't feel sorry for doing it. My take is, if you kill the person, the demon can't, like, go into your body, right? So he can't possess you if you're dead. You know, like, in some demon movies and whatnot, that death does not stop, you know? Like, if you shot the person, the demon would still be there, but the person would die once the demon's out. You know, Supernatural talks about that a lot. And yeah. This is actually, I think, made before Supernatural came out. Which, funny, because it has very similar... you know, things to it.
And the Joker.
Yeah. It had a little bit of Joker, which was really cool. Yeah. We saw that with Liam's, Ray's character, the character Ray, was very much like that. More lively, you know, became more less wooden with it. But, no, I think that's the thing, is if you shoot the girl and then she dies... Mm-hmm. The demon has to go to another source. Yeah. There's a couple things I didn't understand. So, I'm guessing they had to get the demon into the original body, you know, or whatever, in order to send it back. So Malfader had to become like that. And so when Liam walks out and, you know, as the demon... and basically digs the grave up, and then, you know, he's able to go into the body of the, you know, which, then again, if he's just hopping bodies, I don't know. There's a lot of little parts that I didn't understand, because also they did say they did that one spell that, like, was supposed to shut all the doors. Right. Yeah. Or lock all the doors and everything. And it does. It, like, starts locking all the doors.
That was cool.
But yeah, it was like cool, that. Right? But then later on, they're opening up doors and walking through them. And I'm like, that's a little bit of a continuity error.
Well, it's an early film, right? So it wasn't thought through.
Well, I don't know if it was. Like, I don't know if I missed something. Because like I said, there was a lot of talking and a lot of things. But then there was, you know, sometimes I might have missed something there. So, because what I'm thinking is, the demon, why couldn't the demon have just gone into the body of the guy originally, unless he was just fucking with all the characters and stuff, and sorry for my language, but, you know, screwing around with a lot of the characters, and so the characters were going from, you know, he was going to one body so that he could just mess with everybody and things. That's the only thing I can imagine is why he would do that, because otherwise he's basically, why don't he just go into the grave or something? I don't know. Like, it was unexplained necessarily, and when it comes to those things, comes to demons that can just go from body to body, like in the movie Fallen, and stuff like that, you have to kind of, like, Fallen did it well, right, where the person would have to touch the person, so, you know, and then it could transfer to that body, you know, and this, they didn't have that. The demon just was a thing and would just go into people, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Pan Man deals with the same subject, but a little differently.
Okay.
It's very interesting to watch.
I know for every movie, the main character never dies. So I feel like the demon didn't go into the Hudson or any of the four hunters, because they were the main characters. And I guess... I don't know. It's just, I know in every movie that the main character always lives until the end, just to make it more entertaining.
Well, that's true. generally. I guess Hudson was the main character, because he was the one who had all, like, the greatest scenes and everything, even though his character was credited, like, fourth or whatever, like, as an and, which generally is a supporting character or something. But, you know, I think, I forgot who was listed first, maybe Ray, which was the guy that did get, you know, did get possessed and everything. I think Ray got possessed because he was the weakest of all the Shadow Hunters, and he was also the one who had the book, you know, or whatever. So he was the one that the demon wanted the most out of that, because, you know, he's the one who, if he dies, he can't do the spell, right? Which didn't matter, right? Because that was the one thing I hated about the ending. Didn't matter, because, like, at the end of the movie, she doesn't need the spell. She just sends him back, because she was a demon. So she just sends him back to hell. So all of that setup,
for nothing.
Didn't even matter. Didn't even matter that they had to surround him. Didn't matter all that stuff, you know, or whatever. So it, like, it was just that. That's a twist or whatever. That was kind of like a yawn twist. Like, come on, could you really, like, a groan kind of twist? I just didn't. That's the one thing I didn't like about the ending. Is like, okay, we set this all up. We didn't know she was a demon. We knew she was, like, some kind of witch. She was into this stuff. That's all we knew. Yeah. And then at the end, she's a demon that can just send him to hell. Like, why didn't she just do that to begin with?
Yeah.
That was one thing. Another thing is, why did he need to be there talking to them anyway? Once he got into his body, why didn't he just, like, take off? Like, you know, like, if he knew that they had this chance to, like, actually send him back, why wouldn't he just be like, you know, screw you guys, I'm gonna go? That was another, like, plot hole that I felt like, I guess if he had done that, then the movie would have continued somewhere else. You know, they would have had to track him down and everything. And if he just got rid of them to begin with, then they won't be a nuisance to him. That's the only thing, I guess.
He said, like, I'm gonna, like, take over the world or something like that. And he was just standing there saying that, but he didn't do it. Like, he was just waiting for them to do something to him and just saying all this stuff, what he's going to do.
Exactly. Why didn't you just kill him?
Yeah.
Like, he was killing everybody else. I mean, he didn't kill them because they were the main characters. They were the Shadow Hunters. But, like, this movie could have ended. Yeah, sure. It could have ended so cool where he just killed all of them and just walked off.
Just like the Joker, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, could have just done all that and just walked off. I mean, it would have been a completely different ending to a movie that, you know, I think ended kind of okay, but, like, yeah. I think it had its problems with the ending. So I think, honestly, and I had originally had an idea for, like, what I was going to give this before I started, like, my rating, and we'll go into that in about 10 minutes or so when we're wrapped up. But I do want to talk about the special effects, because we talked about that earlier, and you seem to be into the special effects a little bit. Like,
Yeah, I liked how in the sort of the beginning, when the girl, she, I guess, was kind of possessed. I mean, there was, like, electricity coming out of her, but I saw that, that was part of special effects, and that there is, when he disappeared, there was, like, smoke, and there was, like, snow blowing up, and other things that happened, I can't really remember right now, but also the doors, that was pretty cool, how they all shut and opened, and that was cool.
Yeah. And I liked, I guess when they do, like, when they go into the other world or whatever kind of thing, they show, like, is it black and white? It's sort of black and white.
Yeah, that was different.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It made you focus more on the action and more than the, you know, the colors distract you. That's why a lot of, you know, Turner used to, you know, when he created the... He went from black and white to color. People objected because the old film noir was all black and white.
Right.
People focused more on what was happening.
Yeah.
Right? They weren't, but maybe he did that for that reason, or just in the netherworld, there's no colors.
Yeah. Something
like that in purgatory.
Now, it felt like they were like in the dark.
Right.
In like someone's mind or in outer space or something where it's dark.
It got your attention.
Yeah.
It definitely gets your attention.
Special. A little different.
Yeah. So, are you Bonnie, since you're of the younger generation, I mean, I kind of grew up in the 80s, so I'm kind of 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. so I'm kind of used to, like, this is my kind of thing, you know, this movie and everything, and I grew up, like, my parents made me watch, didn't make me, but had me watch, like, black and white movies, and I didn't like it when I was a kid, because I wanted color, because, you know, whatever. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I like both black and white and color, but it's definitely very different from what I watch now.
Right.
Like, now we have animated dogs like we watched today, and a lot of the camera quality is much better, and special effects too, and I guess in right now films, like, the camera quality is very nice. Like if you're focusing on one person, you can see only them, not the background, where like the background is blurry. But I think I do like both, because my dad collects some Western movies, like Steve McQueen, and so I've watched some of his movies and they're pretty good. Like, I love some Western movies, but I think I like both equally, so I think it's pretty cool of, like, what movies people watched in the back and in the past. But also, I think in the past there's a lot of humor, comedy more. But now I think
not everything's so more much serious.
Yeah.
Serious. Well, even in this movie, there was a good amount. There's, you know, they tried for a lot of comedy for times. There's times that it wasn't. Maybe it didn't hit like it probably might have in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The last movie that we had watched, that, you know, on my thing was Zombie Cop, and that had some very racial, very not very cool kind of things to it and everything. This at least didn't have that. It was a little bit more fun and more, you know, a little silly at times, but also very serious at times too. They tried to, they're all business, as you said in the beginning. They were all trying to make sure that they, you know, killed this guy, you know, or whatever, got sent him back to hell, you know. Yeah. And the only thing I'm wondering, like, I guess he keeps escaping is the idea, you know, Malfador, because he escapes.
Yeah, he's a rogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess they're working in tandem trying to get him back to hell.
Yeah.
And they didn't realize it, for she was undercover. But,
yeah.
His boss or whatever. That's the government at work. Even in hell, there's a bureaucracy.
Apparently. Apparently in this universe that John Johnson has created, I kind of like it because they have their own town called Nilbog. So you've heard, like, Nilbog University or Nilbog U was the university, the school that they... you know, so, and he does that, like, every movie that he does takes place in Nilbog, you know, and everything, and so they're all connected in some way or another, but and they actually, to go to it, they actually have a short film that they did years later, 2011 or 12 or something, did a movie called Shadow Hunters Lost. And then there was another one they did in 2015. Don't know if it's ever been released or not, or if it's still, you know, getting fixed up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's called Shadow Hunters Devil Speak. And Hudson returns in that one, but it was not in Shadow Hunters Lost, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. So Hudson returns for whatever. And the other characters aren't still with John. You know, they've all kind of, a lot of them have moved on, a lot of actors have moved on. They're still friends and everything, but they kind of just gone on to do other things, yeah. You know, not work on the projects and stuff. It's kind of what happens in a lot of these indie film groups that have worked together. A lot of times they work together for like a few movies, then they, you know, then the director will move on and have other people. And so I've been lucky enough to work with John, and I'm going to work with John again when I go back to Virginia, whenever that is, because I'll always be happy to work with him. Mm-hmm. But this, he has definitely changed, and this is one of his early works. As I said, it's like one of his like second movies or whatever. And I think the nudity and sex was probably something that was asked of for, in order for him to make, you know, to get it the out
distribution
there. Distribution.
they want that,
and that actually really blood does help. But it does make it mature audience, you know, kind of thing, instead of, so I understood after. I was like, gosh, I should have watched this before. We would have picked something. I have other movies that are very much more clean and more PG, or not even PG, but like PG-13 at least, you know, and stuff. So, you know, this is definitely R, going a little further than R, like unrated, you know, kind of style. So, but with that being said, I honestly think that aside from like the ending where they had like a lot of those plot holes, and maybe even the beginning where it had like a lot of the talk or whatever, I felt like this movie, for somebody's like first or second movie or whatever it was, I think that this movie was pretty damn good, compared, you know. It's still not going to get a high rating when I do my rating, but I think, you know, I've seen worse, way worse movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it did keep my attention. Might have, you know, kind of not kept your guys as much, you know. And once again, you watched movies with your dad, you know, that have probably been of this nature, like, you know, low budget indie films or whatever.
Well, I've been in a lot of them.
Yeah.
Low budget.
You know. And do you show her a lot of those?
If she wants to, but, you know, over the, you know, objections of her mother, I have to listen to her.
Your mother would not have wanted you to watch this movie, I don't think.
Not at all. She wouldn't be happy with it.
I'm kind of glad she wasn't here. That would have been very awkward. Yeah.
We won't tell her.
Yeah. Let's keep it that.
But anyway, I really was impressed with the director. I'm not slamming him at all, because for a first early film, you know, it turned out quite well.
We've done that before. We've reviewed people's early works. A lot of them they don't like. I think John does like this movie enough to like say we can do more with it, and if you see that short film, Shadowhunters Lost, it's a lot better. Well, just looking, it doesn't look like a movie shot on, because it's not. It's shot on digital, but it's not shot on, you know, mini DV or whatever it was that this was originally shot on. And it was something that they made with their friends, you know, like you could do, as I said, like you've done with your friends.
Yeah.
And probably will continue to do so. I mean, you know, why not? You know, go out there and make movies. And that's...
Yeah. People do it with cell phones.
I mean, I do interviews and other things on my cell phone. It's very simple, you know.
It's good quality.
It's good quality. And, you know, it's better than a lot of these video cameras that are out and available. So, so what are your final thoughts on it, like, before we go into our rating?
It was good, I guess. Just some of it was
too much.
Yeah, too much. Right. But camera angles were good. Like, I liked that. Some of the actors were really good. And special effects were good. That's pretty much what I have to say.
What about you, Larry?
Well, I think that I enjoyed parts of it, and I think it was aimed at a younger male audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, even for me, I mean, because I'm an older person now, I'm a senior citizen, gratuitous sex is not my bag. But, you know.
I really don't. I don't like it either. I've only done one project where I had a little bit of nudity, like topless nudity, mm-hmm. and like that even got lost, so nobody will ever see it. There might be like a topless scene or something, but it's not gratuitous, you know, if I ever put them in there. So I don't like it myself. Honestly, I feel like it's stuff that people ask to put in. Like, my first film, Scary Story Slumber Party, has none of that in it. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to a guy asking for distribution, and he said there was no nudity, so he's not going to buy it. And I said, wow, really? Like, you know, yeah. That's kind
it's
of
not bad. Really necessary.
The rule of thumb, mostly for horror films, is if you have blood, you need to have breasts. So, you know, because I made a movie with a guy years ago called The Janitor. And he was taking it to the extreme because he was making a parody of horror films. So too many boobs, too much blood.
Of course,
so, but it worked. It was funny and fun, and it was of course excessive.
And that, you wouldn't show Bonnie that, right?
Or, no, you know, she'd never like, seen that.
Yeah, and but, it's not anyway. You know something. No. You know, and that's the thing. I like the janitor. Janitor.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Well, I played Mr. Abula Base.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Andy's work.
I'm the only one that Andy didn't kill.
Yeah.
So, wow. You really know a lot of people. I know.
I know. It's I've interviewed him back in 2008. Yeah. I want to say.
I did a lot of his early work.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Haven't seen it in forever. And
have you seen the one where I lip synced to the Hairy Back? The Hairy Back song?
No, I don't.
Oh, God. That's funny.
I gotta send that to you.
Yeah.
That is amazing. That was funny.
That was one of his most creative things.
Well, we are at that time right now to do the review. So, to recap, the review is a stinkometer, where it was created by Paul as a way to rate stinky movies, and so a 1 is a very good movie. Not very stinky at all. And a 10 is stinky, stinky, stinky zombie cop / Neil Breen type stink. And you guys have not seen Neil Breen, but oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Gratuitous sex or whatever, but movies are just redonkulous and like, ugh. So let's, I guess, go into our thing. I always let my guests go first. Of course, right. Bonnie, do you want to go?
Ladies first.
Ladies first.
Well, age before beauty.
Oh! That's the buck. I think, to be diplomatic, I'd give it a 5.
You give it a 5?
Yeah, I'm on the fence.
You're on the fence? So 5 or so. What was on the fence of? Like 5 or 4 or 5 or 3 or 5 or 6?
5 or 6.
5 or 6, so yeah. You're going to go with 5.
5+, yeah.
Yeah, 5, okay.
I was going to say a 6.
You're going to say a 6?
Yeah.
I was actually going to say a 6 as well, because originally I was going to give it a 4. You know, before I started this, I was going to give it a 4. Then I chose to give it a 6 because, not just because of the gratuitous things, but because of the, just the little plot holes and continuity errors and things like that that kind of make a movie a little bit more stinky. It's still, to me, it's a fun movie, and most audience members might be okay with the gratuitous, you know, sex and nudity.
Sure they would be.
So, like, that, telling them that might jump, make them run to go buy it. However, like, if you are watching it with your kids, this is not...
No.
This is not a movie for...
Do not.
Yeah, even your kids will feel a little awkward watching it. Like, especially with their dads. I mean, sorry.
But young men, you know, with a beer in their hand will like this movie.
Yes. 20-year-olds or 18-year-olds and up that like this kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I would suggest
that's
that. Even 17-year-old kids, maybe, you know, or whatever.
Teenage boys.
Yeah,
the hormones.
They would watch this, but girls, definitely, this is just...
No.
Like, you know, because there's no male nudity at all.
Oh, God. that would really sink it.
Yeah. So it wasn't even like there was anything interesting for little girls to want to watch, you know, or whatever. Yeah, no. For that. No. So it was like awkward.
Yes.
And like I said, we fast forwarded through a lot of that. So.
But we got the idea.
But they got, you got the idea. You didn't need that stuff anyway. But let's, Larry, before we wrap this up, tell us, what have you been up to? You mentioned a couple things in the podcast that you've been doing, but mention some stuff.
I am so busy right now. Be careful what you wish for. Last year was kind of dry for me. I only did a couple of things. And then suddenly, boom, everything hit at once. It's because some things got pushed to this year. And then now it's a perfect storm. They're all converging on each other. I have like six scripts I'm balancing, having to learn the lines for, and then different accents and different attitudes and different characters. And well, I'm working with James Balsamo right now. I've just finished two of his movies.
Two of his movies, yeah, wow. So which ones?
Well, Catch of the Day 2, and see if I can remember the other one. I'm working on Hollywood Werewolf right now, where I play a sleazy manager who plays his sacks in alleys at night when the moon is full. And
he does gratuitous nudity in his films.
I haven't encountered that yet.
Oh, so you haven't watched any of them? I'm just doing my part.
I have never seen a James Balsamo movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to show my daughter
that. Yeah, that's definitely not appropriate for that.
Anything that I'm in is just, you know, complete vanilla.
You don't have the scenes where there's nudity around you.
It is fun, though. I mean, some of the stuff we do. And I'm playing a New York, manager with a sleazy accent and all that. But I did another one called It Wants Blood.
It Wants Blood.
With the man you just mentioned earlier, Eric Robertson. Or Eric Roberts?
Eric Roberts.
He's in it. And so I'm not with him in a scene, but I play a cameo role in that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing all three of these movies at some point. But he juggles them, you know, like four at a time. So I'm in three of the four. And then another one called Compatible. Just got back from Colorado on that. I explained that to you earlier. But I play a father of a young girl who makes a bad choice in a dating site. And she pays the price.
Oh.
And we're set up for a sequel on that. So hopefully that comes about. And so the other one is a film noir based right here in this area called Portuguese Bend. It actually exists. It's about a corrupt harbor commission. And I can't say anything more than that because of an NDA. But so that's one. And then I have a film in Alabama called Repulse. It's about a prostitution ring. But it's a message film.
Oh.
It's not just sleaze. There's a reason for it. But they're having trouble getting funding for some reason, and it's been pushed back. And then there's another one called Clown Motel 2 that I've just been cast in. The first one went global. It's an
it's all over the place. Motel, so. It's in Walmart.
Joe Kelly. Yeah. And so.
And I just met him because you introduced me to him.
That's right. Well,
him and Mark Piero. So that was awesome.
He's very wise in marketing. Kind of a wizard at marketing. So he's got it in almost every country. It's really big in Turkey right now, I hear. So anyway, and there's some more on top of that I can't even think of at the moment. But
it's wild. Like.
Where?
Call the Wild.
Call It a Wild. Oh, yes. I was in Call It a Wild with Harrison Ford.
The new
Ford.
One?
Yeah. I had a small role. I played a minister in it. So.
Did you guys go see
it? We just came back from there right before you came over. So we saw it today at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
So, you know, I'm in a couple scenes, and I'm happy with it.
It's a really it's a great good movie.
I've heard good things about it.
It's a family film. Completely. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Very
good. It has a sad ending, but, you know, it's a
funny
good
how
movie.
You watch that, then you watch this.
Completely very different.
Yeah.
Changed our frame of mind.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Anyway, so I was thinking at a certain age, you stop doing these things, but it's just picked up. It's like for every wrinkle, I do another film. I'm like, okay.
Well, good.
I'm bored.
You need to do more stuff.
I
want to
go all the way, like Eli Wallach and Ernest Borgnine and some of those guys. Mickey Rooney, 95. Tie me to a chair so I don't fall out. Give me a line, and I'm happy. And Eli Wallach stole a scene from five A-list actors in the room with him.
Are you talking about for the Wild Bunch?
Last movie they did. No, the last movie. I can't even remember the name of it. But he was in a room and he did some improv.
And
he stole her thunder.
Of course.
In 95. It's like, oh, that's an actor.
Exactly.
So I was like, I want to do that.
Well, there you go. Well, just keep at it.
I'm hopeful.
Right. So. Well, it looks like you're getting a lot of work, and that's amazing. We still have in March, so around this time, probably, because I think this will go out like after we put out your Indie Film Cafe spotlight. So we'll have your interview that comes out in March, and so that'll be there. Then this review. And then, holy
thanks
cow.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You're welcome anytime.
And we're also doing another segment that you and I will be doing the first episode of, where we're going to be talking about for Film Freaks, which is a different thing that I do. But we're going to be talking about Alfred Hitchcock on that, so that should already be out. By the time this comes out,
great.
It's coming out next week.
One of the all-time greats, yeah.
That we shot.
I'm really looking forward to working with you in the future.
We've got a couple projects that we're hoping to work with you on and everything. Can't really say too much yet, but when we can't wait. And I'll probably have you back on here. To do another podcast, maybe in a couple months or something, maybe every other month you join me, maybe with another guest, unless, we find another more kid friendly movie to watch with her. Cause I'm not going to put her through that again. That was
right. No, I appreciate it.
Yeah. I think you appreciate that too, Bonnie. what have you been up to?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, no films, but just school.
Just school. See, she's a kid. She's.
Let her be a kid.
Let her be a kid. Hey,
we pulled her from auditioning. It was just too much.
Yeah. My parents never wanted me to be like a child actor or whatever because they wanted me to do school most of the time. Plus, they didn't really know much about that stuff. So, I didn't start doing like film acting till I got older. And everything. So it's really cool to hear that like kids are, getting asked to do that and doing it because, there are characters that will be needed for that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I remember in elementary school I used to get pulled out of class like twice a week.
Right.
Because I've always had auditions like almost every day. Well, not every day, but like...
A couple times a week.
Yeah, my mom would have to take me because my dad would be at work or something. And so it was very tough on my mom because she had to take me a lot on traffic. And it was just very bad. But now it's good because now they have EchoCast where you can take a video of yourself doing the audition instead of like... going there and being stuck in traffic for 2 hours. So
yeah, it's really LA. It's in Virginia it's a lot different than LA. Like a stuck in traffic for like to go down, like if I went to Richmond it'd be an hour, but it wouldn't be 2 hours or something, really. Like it might be an hour and a half at the most, but if it's traffic. But even the traffic there isn't nearly as bad as the traffic here.
Yeah.
Especially if I just came down to see you guys, because I live in a different part of Los Angeles. If I came to see you guys, it took about 45 minutes to get here. Not bad at all.
For a Sunday, yeah.
So generally would probably take about an hour, hour and a half or something, And so, thankfully, it wasn't that bad. And I even told you I wasn't even sure when I was going to be here because of the traffic. You just never know.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with LA, as opposed to other places. So.
Right.
Well, thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
And I really appreciate it, Bonnie. I know you didn't know anything about this stuff. You're kind of a little nervous, I'm sure. And, You're not nervous now, thank God, or whatever. I think once you started doing it, you realized it was, like I said, you could talk whenever you feel like it or or whatnot, and, you know, or if you don't feel comfortable. And there were times you didn't feel comfortable saying anything, so there you go.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I appreciate it. And appreciate you, Larry, taking your time out of your busy schedule, considering you got so many freaking projects going on. You got so many scripts to read, man.
I know. I know. And, you know, I just like, can I remember all of this stuff? And then the director changes the script on me. Uh-huh. All the lines I learned, he said, they're gone. Because we couldn't get somebody, and then we have to combine the lines.
Oh, God.
We wrote the pages. Now we went to white to blue pages, and like, oh, my God.
Yeah, those are the worst, when it's like the next day, and you have to memorize.
Well, fortunately, a couple weeks away, so I can still try to learn those lines all over again. Like,
life of being an actor, man. I know. Yeah, it's not. So. It doesn't get any easier with age, you know. It probably gets harder.
Yeah, it does, but it's good for an aging brain to work at it like this. Because, like, mental push-ups. So, you know, it keeps me sharp.
Yep.
So, other people my age are just sitting there rocking and drooling.
Yeah.
Staring at the
wall. There you are. There you're all. You're very in shape. You're very running around doing a bunch of different stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
People ask me my age, and I'm like, they're shocked when I tell them. Like, they think I'm like in my 50s or something.
What were you going to say, Bonnie?
Go ahead.
Oh, well, he is an invention. He likes doing very risky stuff.
Ambitious.
Sometimes.
Oh, well. Yeah. She's talking about physical stuff. Like climbing mountains, jumping out of planes.
Well, because, like, for his age, usually people don't do that. Right. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous to them. You know, like, oh, you're too old. You can't do anything. Like,
yeah.
But then, like, he told me when he was his younger age, he was, like, a bit overweight. But people told him, oh, you can't climb this mountain. You're too heavy or something like that. He's like, okay, watch me. And he'll show them, like, he can do it. So, like, he's been a role model to me because I kind of want to do the same, you know. I want to travel the world and, you know, do some risky stuff, not, like, doing 200 jumps.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Well, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. I told her that earlier. You got to be careful. When you skydive and you climb mountains and you travel, and we're careful, but we still do it.
Yeah.
So
well, there you go. Well, thank you guys so much once again, and we'll definitely have you back on. I'm sure we'll get you back on, Bonnie.
Yeah, right.
You seem to have a good time with it. We'll just next time I'll make sure it's a little bit easier for you to watch and everything like
that. Lassie or something like that.
What?
Lassie.
Oh, that's not really an indie film.
I'm joking.
maybe for another podcast, maybe.
So maybe a comedy. You only do horror, right?
Nope, I don't only do horror. Okay. We do comedy sometimes.
Charlie Chaplin.
I don't know if he's definitely not indie. I have a few comedies that would be a little light-spirited and a little whatever, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see sometime down the road, but thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Be sure to check out Indie Film Cafe on Twitter. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, as well as I think we're on sickflickproductions.com, indiefilmcafe.reviews, and indiefilmcafe.podbean.com is where the normal podcast is at. So check us out on the web or Google. Just Google Indie Film Cafe and just a whole bunch of stuff will pop up. So you can check out any of the places like Spreaker or what's it, Spreaker? No. A bunch of different places, Radio Public and iHeartRadio, Overcast, tons of different places that you can check out this podcast. So check it out and enjoy and let us know what you guys think. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Oh, there it goes. It looks like it's working. Say something.
Hello, folks at home.
You want to say something?
Hi.
You might need to get closer when we're doing it. Here. So you might want to get closer.
Maybe in the middle.
Yeah, you've got a little lighter of a voice.
Soft. I have a
cheaper
voice.
All right.
Say hello.
Hi.
All right. So let's...